Hey there, and welcome to our deep dive into the world of tornadoes. Today, we're focusing on a fascinating comparison: right-moving supercell tornadoes versus those spawned by quasi-linear convective systems. Yeah, those squall-line tornadoes that always seem to sneak up on people.
Oh, absolutely. And this overview is packed. It's all based on a document by Richard L. Thompson, who works with NOAA's Storm Prediction Center. We'll get into why certain tornadoes are harder to spot, especially at night, and what that means for staying safe.
Before we jump in, let's set the stage. This conversation's not just about stats and science, but how meteorology plays out in real time, impacting warnings, responses, and, well, the lives of anyone in tornado country.
Right, and it's kind of wild. Most of what we know, or think we know about tornadoes, has come from looking at those big, right-moving supercell storms. But QLC's tornadoes, the ones that show up in those squall lines, they're getting more common and prove way trickier for meteorologists.
That's the key. The purpose of this research was to dig into trends since 2003 and see how these two tornado types differ, explore their roots, look at how tech improvements have changed reporting, and honestly, ask whether we're even classifying them correctly.
So today's audio overview will walk you through the nitty-gritty storm mechanics, how radar sees these twisters, the mysterious world of mesovortices, and why sometimes tornado warnings can feel like a game of chance.
And one more hook. We're going to talk about why QLC's tornadoes are so tough to spot, how night complicates it all, and whether warnings should change depending on tornado type. Buckle up!
This is Twisters in Plain Sight. Let's kick things off.
Let's start by laying out what makes a right-moving supercell tornado different from a QLCS tornado. Supercell tornadoes, right, are like the poster child. Big, photogenic, and usually the ones folks think of in movies.
They're also the main cause of serious tornado fatalities and injuries. It turns out, while they're only about 15% of tornadoes reported, they do most of the real damage. QLCS, or squall-line tornadoes, make up over 20%, but tend to be weaker.
And get this, since 2003, QLCS tornadoes have actually gotten more frequent, while right-moving supercell tornadoes have gone down. No one's entirely sure why, but there's even been a shift eastward. RM tornadoes now pop up more in the Mississippi Valley than, say, Kansas.
Isn't that odd? Part of it comes down to the environment. Those classic supercells form out west, where the conditions are just right, but QLCS tornadoes cluster near radar sites and are reported more at night, often in more populated, tree-filled places further east.
So why does that matter? Well, those different setups don't just affect where they happen, they shape how these tornadoes form. Supercells use an organized updraft to create a persistent, rotating column. QLCS tornadoes? Their roots are in the chaos of a squall line, with mini-spinning regions called mesovortices.
Those mesovortices are like little twisters inside the bigger storm, right? Sort of the surprise party of tornadoes, except way less fun.
Exactly! Supercells, you can almost picture like one giant spinning top. But QLC's tornadoes, you've got these gust fronts and horizontal vorticity. Basically, imagine rolling a pencil along a desk. When conditions tilt that horizontal spin up into the storm, you get a localized twister.
That's the baroclinic process at work. The cold pool. Think of it as the chilly air left behind after rain-cooled downdrafts smashes into warmer inflow air at the gust front. This collision creates sharp changes in wind direction and can spin up those little vortices.
Two big ways, actually. Sometimes just one cyclonic vortex forms. Other times you can get a couplet, a cyclonic vortex and an anticyclonic one, like two wild dancers veering in opposite directions. It depends on outflow surges and the lay of the storm.
Right. And recent research even found that sometimes updrafts inside the squall line grab vorticity and turn it upward, almost like a supercell. It's a mix, a real Frankenstein's monster of tornado genesis, where several processes can happen at once.
You know, that mix is why scientists still don't agree on any single dominant mechanism for mesovortex formation. One question I sometimes get is, do these setups change how the tornado feels on radar? Turns out they really do.
Let's get into radar. Everyone loves a good storm chaser radar image. So, supercell tornadoes, especially the stronger ones, show up with a tight, fast-spinning couplet on radar called rotational velocity, or VROT. Higher VROT equals more spin equals bigger threat.
VROT is basically the average speed of air going in opposite directions right next to each other. So imagine standing with a fan blowing right at one ear and another at the opposite ear, but in the other direction. The sharper that difference, the more easily radar picks up a tornado.
That's why for the weakest tornadoes, EF0 on the enhanced Fujita scale, there's little difference between RM and QLCS radar signatures. But if you move up to EF1 or higher, supercells usually have much tighter, faster couplets.
Exactly. And the velocity couplet diameter, basically how fat or skinny that spinning zone looks on radar, actually tells you something. Stronger supercell tornadoes? They get skinnier as they intensify. QLCS tornadoes, though, keep that broad, chunky profile even when they're stronger.
Which in plain English means QLCS tornadoes are sneakier. They're harder to pick out from the radar background, even with super-resolution scans. Sometimes the only clue you get is from damage reported after the fact.
Let's throw in mesovortex speed. QLCS tornadoes often zip along faster than their supercell cousins, like 39 knots versus 29 knots for RM tornadoes. That shorter lifespan, the fast movement, and messy radar signatures combine to make them a real headache for forecasters.
Speaking of headaches, let's unpack the cold pool and shear balance stuff. This matters because scientists use the three ingredients method to forecast QLCS tornadoes. You need a sharp interface between outflow and inflow, a strong shear, and the right spot where they line up vertically.
It's kind of like looking for the sweet spot where two rivers meet. If the shear vector orthogonal to the line, the winds cutting across the storm, is over 30 knots, then bam, you've got a recipe for vortex formation. But that sweet spot moves, and sometimes the storms don't cooperate.
To complicate things, research in the southeast found the cold pool temperature deficit isn't always dramatically different between storm types or even between tornadic and non-tornadic storm events. So there's no easy shortcut.
That uncertainty explains why QLCS tornado detection and warning performance are notoriously tricky. Shorter lead times, more missed warnings, right? One study showed QLCS tornado warnings give you, on average, 4 minutes less notice than supercell warnings.
4 minutes might not sound like much, but if you're in the path, that time is everything.
Definitely. Now, let's dig into one of my favorite recent radar breakthroughs, tornadic debris signatures, TDS. These are essentially smudges on dual polarization radar images that show actual debris flying through the air.
Right, and TDSs are more likely and more prominent in stronger supercell tornadoes. For QLCS tornadoes, particularly weaker ones, a TDS might be shallow or missing altogether, especially if the radar isn't sampling super close to the ground.
Here's a cool stat from the document. For EF1 tornadoes sampled closer than 3,000 feet to the radar, supercells produce a debris signature almost two-thirds of the time, while QLCS storms do so about half the time. If you're looking under 1,000 feet, the odds improve a bit, but supercells still lead.
It kind of blows my mind. More QLCS tornadoes happen in places with lots of trees or buildings that could provide debris, but we still see fewer radar debris signatures from them. It's not just about what's there to pick up, it's the whole structure of the storm.
It's almost like RM tornadoes are those power lifters at the gym, able to pick up and throw more weight, in this case debris, higher into the air. QLCS tornadoes, even in built-up environments, just don't have the same muscle.
I like that analogy. And when you think about detection at night, it gets even trickier. QLCS tornadoes are more commonplace at night, so you're not seeing that classic condensation funnel, and you're relying even more on damage reports or subtle blips on radar.
And about those damage reports, they're not always as clear-cut as you'd hope. A lot of QLCS tornadoes, especially weak ones, are reported based primarily on a convergent damage path. But the challenge is, some of those could be from straight-line winds instead.
Exactly. It's like you walk into your backyard after a storm and find the fence blown down. But was it tornadic winds twisting it, or just a powerful gust?
Radar helps, but only up to a point. If the tornado is shallow, meaning not extending very high off the ground, it might not even show up well unless it passes close to the radar. This limitation is bigger for QLCS tornadoes, since they tend to be shallower.
New radar tech has made a difference. We've got super resolution velocity data now and dual polarization. So picking up on those weak, quick-hitting tornadoes is better than it was, say, 20 years ago. But man, it's still an uphill battle.
There's even been speculation some QLCS tornadoes are underreported, especially the really weak EF01s. And yeah, sometimes EF1 ratings are a little inflated just because it's hard to tell tornadic damage apart from just strong winds, especially in wooded areas.
And sometimes, oddly enough, the number of tornadoes jumps in regions or at times when radar or survey methods change. The paper talks about a muted increase in QLCS tornadoes in the traditional QLCS belt, maybe because local weather offices adopted improved detection strategies earlier.
It makes you wonder, are we really seeing more tornadoes, or are we just better at finding them? Or maybe better at misclassifying them sometimes?
That's a great question for our listeners, by the way. How much trust do you put in tornado warnings, especially when the risk is weak QLCS tornadoes? Do you act the same way as you would for a classic supercell threat?
And jumping off that, should the National Weather Service treat all tornadoes the same way in terms of warnings and forecasts? Right now, every tornado counts the same, whether it's a brief EF0 or a violent EF4. But maybe we need a more nuanced approach.
Especially given that the vast majority of tornado deaths and injuries come from those stronger, longer-lived tornadoes. Mostly the supercell type.
Totally. I mean, the QLCS tornadoes, on average, are responsible for only about 1% of deaths and up to 7% of injuries, even though they make up more than 80% of weak tornado reports.
And in the other corner, the significant tornadoes, EF2 and above, cause over 90% of deaths and injuries. So perhaps it doesn't make sense to scare people just as much about a brief EF0 in a squall line as about a monster supercell.
Plus, people's responses can vary based on the timing. Overnight tornadoes already see less warning response. People are sleeping or disoriented if woken up. That's why QLC's tornadoes, which peak at night, are so insidious.
Manufactured housing is especially at risk here. The Southeast, where more folks live in these homes, also gets more nocturnal QLCS tornadoes. Even a weak tornado can do a lot of damage if it hits the right spot.
True, and for those folks, any tornado, even a brief one, is a big deal. But for urban high-rises or reinforced homes, a typical EF0 squall line twister might be indistinguishable from a strong wind gust.
So maybe smarter warnings, fewer, but more targeted at actual risk, could help people listen when it really counts. The paper even suggests that, by cutting back on warnings for low-end tornadoes with QLCS events, we could build more trust for those rare high-end supercell tornadoes that really deserve quick action.
Interesting idea. But, you know, one thing the paper points out is that current guidelines don't differentiate by tornado type or intensity when verifying warnings. There's some inertia there, for better or worse.
And changing how we warn people isn't just about the science. It's about public perception, education, and honestly, not crying wolf for every little twister.
But of course, even one underwarned tornado that becomes a killer would be, well, unacceptable, so that balance is tricky.
No kidding. It's a real challenge, but it does feel like the tech and research are constantly moving to help us get there. Better detection, smarter mapping of squall lines, and more attention to conditions that tend to spin up those sneaky QLCS tornadoes.
It's wild to think about how tornado research and radar technology work together. Like, every tiny improvement in radar helps someone somewhere stay safer.
And maybe, going forward, every improvement in public understanding will help too. People need to know what type of tornado threat they're facing, not just that one exists.
Maybe that'll be our mission. Help demystify the tornadoes that spin up in the night, the ones radar struggles to find, and the ones emergency managers really worry about.
So next time you see a tornado warning, maybe pause to think, is this from a churning supercell out on the plains, or from a sneaky squall line blowing through at 2 a.m.? The answer can make all the difference.
All right, to wrap up, right-moving supercell tornadoes and QLCS, or squall line tornadoes, might share the tornado label, but they're different beasts. Supercells are stronger, more iconic, and easier to spot. QLCS tornadoes are fast, sneaky, and tough to detect, especially when it's dark out.
The research shows that while QLCS tornadoes are becoming more common, they're mostly weaker, though that doesn't make them harmless. Detection is still tough, partly due to radar limitations, partly because of overlaps with straight-line wind damage, and more so at night.
We've talked about mesovortices, cold pool and shear balance, radar signatures, and the challenge of making accurate reports. It seems like smarter, more nuanced warnings and improved public understanding could really help keep people safe, especially as storms change.
So whether you're a weather enthusiast, a storm spotter, or just someone hearing the sirens at 3 a.m., knowing what kind of tornado is coming your way can help you respond better. Don't treat them all alike, but always take them seriously.
Thanks for joining us for this overview inspired by Richard L. Thompson's document, and for riding along as we sorted through the science and the real-world stakes of tornado warnings. Keep an eye on the skies, and as always, stay curious.